let me move on to the discussion of the executive committee work on the strategy review. That, as part of that process, an earlier summary was distributed to the public with a request for comments. That period is closed, and we have now analyzed the comments. And perhaps, Tom, we can start by just summarizing our analysis of those comments.
So, you remember, we issued, the trustees issued the strategy review paper on the 5th of November last year. And after a few requests, extended the comment period to finish at the end of February. Just by way of background, there were a couple of points that should be said in front. First of all, what's interesting, this whole process came out of the constitutional review and specifically comments that were discussed at the conclusion of the constitutional review is that it was our constitution is largely refined. But what people were concerned about is how it gotten most of the world onto IFRS and nearly to the point of global adoption, that the organization should be forward-looking in the way it sees its strategy, and that would be the most productive use of trustees' time. So this whole exercise emerged from constituent requests. Now, this also relates to another point that we heard a lot in our strategy review responses and in our discussions with stakeholders. How does this review fit in with the governance review? I think there's a lot of confusion out there in the marketplace between the mining board's efforts and our efforts. I think there's a sense internally that they complement each other quite well, that the mining board is focused on the narrow issue of their role, structure, membership, and how they relate to our governance, whereas our strategy review addresses broad issues of how the trustees implement their governance role and how do we envision our organization strategy going forward. So they're complementary, but I think there's a sense that there needs to be greater explanation of, one, how they do complement each other and how they'll come to completion. So those were general remarks regarding our strategy review process. What I can say is that we received 94 letters from a broad range of groups, industries, individuals, types of organizations, and from a broad range of geographic areas with not dissimilar to most common exercises, the most from Europe, but not exclusively. We had 16% from Asia, 12% from North America, and 15% from international bodies. So a pretty wide range of stakeholder views expressed. But what was interesting, if you read the response, is that there was quite a bit of consensus on this particular question that we asked as it relates to the mission, our current mission statement, and the objectives listed in the Constitution. 80% of the respondents broadly supported the current mission, and particularly the focus on investors and other users of financial information. There were some that would argue that we should be narrowly focused on equity holders. At the same time, there were others that would say, particularly the NGOs that comment, that we should take into a wider range of stakeholder views and public policy considerations. It was pretty strong that 80% of the respondents supported the mission as it is currently stated. Secondly, which was quite relevant to post-crisis issues, was the interaction between financial reporting and other public policy concerns, particularly financial stability requirements. And there was a strong sense that the current focus was correct, that the primary focus has to be investors and other users of information, and that to the extent that you take care of prudential concerns, it should be in the process of consultation, but they should not, when they do conflict prudential concerns, they should not undermine the transparency of accounting standards. So what does resulted from that are recommendations more focused on the engagement of the ISP and regulators in a structured format and understanding financial stability implications through an active consultation process. In terms of the general governance, there remains strong support for the three-tier structure as described in the document. What seems to be the general case is that there needs to be a greater definition of the roles of each of those tiers. And as a reminder, for a top tier being the Monitoring Board of the Public Capital Market Authorities, the middle being the trustees, and the third, I don't want to just say the ISC, but all foundation activities, including the ISC. As it relates to us, as our organization, let me focus on the trustees and the ISC, that there's a sense that the trustees should have a more visible role, that particularly their role in oversight of the ISB's due process should be demonstrated more clearly and that it should be shown to be more effective. And really the focus is on the due process oversight committee. So we knew some of this already, and this is what the trigger for lots of the work that David Sidwell just described. And then there's a desire among many to have a greater role for the Advisory Council on IFRS-related activities. I think there is a general sense that the board should still remain focused in terms of the primary criteria for selection, technical expertise, and I could get more into the board's process later. The question four about the formal political endorsement of the Monitoring Board arrangement and further public accountability was interesting. It really was a question about the sufficiency of the adequacy of the three-tier structure and whether, like in some environments, that the securities regulator is accountable to elected parliament, whether there needed to be something like that created on an international level. What was surprising to me was only 14% of our respondents thought that such a further link was necessary. And that implies to me, and maybe I read it too strongly, is that the Monitoring Board is sufficient as in terms of structure if we clarify and enhance the different levels for the last question. So I think that was quite revealing that the structure as it is today at least is the basis for for a strong governance process with independence and public accountability. There was a lot of attention in our comment process on question five in terms of process, procedure, and mainly this focus is on the due process of the ISD. And it's not surprising the focus is on agenda setting, just general consultation efforts, effect analyses, field testing, and post-implementation reviews. You know, I think there's a general sense that the agenda setting process needs to have a public consultation. This is part of our normal due process now. I think there's a lot of weight being put to what is going to result and how the process is going to be run over the next few months. And that there should be adequate feedback and understanding of why the ISD decided to take something on its agenda and why it decided to give other items lower priority. There's clearly a lot of push on having effect analyses, impact assessments, whatever you'd like to call them, to be a regular part of the process. But there's a clear need to define what we mean by effect analyses. I think impact assessment, effect analyses mean different things for different people. So we need to develop a common understanding of what that is, what people expect us to do on that, if we say it's part of our normal due process, which it is. Now, it's a required element of our due process at the ISB for major projects. And post-implementation reviews is a desire to have a pretty broad scope in on post-implementation reviews to at least make sure that the standards are performing the function that it intended to perform when it was written and that there were no unintended consequences resulting from post-implementation reviews. Question six said there was an emphasis on consistent application. 70% said that this will be a more important issue as we go forward. But there was a sense that the ISB and the foundation by itself had limited ability to ensure consistent application and consistent implementation, and that the best way to do it is in conjunction with other regulators, establish a forum of regulators, work with national standard setters. On financing, it's not a surprise that everyone is for a stable, diversified, and automatic system of funding. There's not much advice about how we could go about it, but I think there's a sense that we do need a publicly sponsored or intermediated forms of funding that don't adversely affect the independence of the organization. I think I'll leave it at that. I think that covers the majority of major points. As I said, I was surprised with how much consistency of viewpoints there were, and these were many of the issues that are being tackled already by the trustees as part of the strategy review.
Thank you, Tom. Let me just outline the current state of the paper. And this paper will be published in the next several weeks for comment. And which I think you'll see as I outline it, even in the high level that I will today, that it is reflective of the comments you've just heard summarized and very much consistent with those comments in a number of dimensions. There are essentially four parts to the paper, one dealing with mission, one with governance, one with both the IASB and the Foundation's process and procedures, and the last one with funding. Under mission, and again you'll see the consistency, the notion that standards should be those that faithfully report a company's financial position and performance and serve investors broadly in resource allocation decisions. The sense that the convergence of standards can support adoption, but full adoption is the proper end goal. That we think the paper will recognize properly that there is a transitional period to full adoption, and that transitional period is likely to differ from one country to another, depending on the peculiarities of the country. But again, that the focus is on full adoption, and the convergence is an enabler of that. And finally, that the primary focus of standards should be on private sector entities. On the issues of governance, the independence of the IASB as a standard-setting process and its standard-setter within the framework of accountability should be the primary continuing objective. That independence and accountability are best maintained by the three-tier structure to which Tom referred, that is the monitoring board, the foundation trustees, and the IASB itself. And that the paper will go to elaborate and clarify how the trustees can best discharge their duty within the context of this three-tier structure. On the third issue of board and foundation process and procedures, again, as Tom has alluded to earlier, a heightened role for the IFRS Foundation due process oversight committee, particularly in assessing IASB adherence to its own due process responsibility. The need for the IASB to further develop what are already well-respected field visit and impact assessment methodologies, both to define them and develop. The need for the IASB to continue to communicate how its agenda priorities are set and to provide effective feedback to public consultation on that set of issues. And last, and this is an issue that specifically was raised by the Advisory Council, among others, in comment, the need to work with securities regulators, national standard setters, to measure implementation divergences around the world and to encourage the end goal of consistent implementation of the standards. As Tom said, the board cannot do this itself. It has to rely on these mechanisms, and we're going to try and encourage them to help us. And finally, on financing, the system has to be designed in a way that maintains the independence of the IASB while, again, retaining accountability. And that important dimensions to accomplish this are funding that has a long-term commitment, that has public sponsorship, that is flexible, that is shared proportionately, and that is publicly accountable. So those are the major elements, dimensions. And as I say, our procedure from here is to finalize the drafting of this paper and to publish it for comments quite shortly. We'll also publish a summary of the feedback statements that Tom has just discussed that we've received. We, during the period now following the publication, we'll have a full period for comments from constituencies. I think what is the full, we anticipate 90-day period, consistent with our guidelines. That as part of that comment period, we will hold roundtables in various parts of the world. I presently anticipate in Japan, Hong Kong, New York, and London, as well as discussions with our advisory council here in London in June. And that we anticipate and hope to publish the final paper sometime in mid-July. As Tom has mentioned earlier, we are going to take all steps we can to coordinate both this process of moving forward and the contents of our paper with the content of the Monitoring Board report on governance. Clearly, these two reports, ours on strategy covering the various elements of mission governance, among other issues, in the Monitoring Board report on governance, dealing with its own governance issues within the context of this three-tier structure. These are related and complementary efforts, and we have to work hard with the Monitoring Board to coordinate them, both as regards to their content and the timing of the release of the reports. And we are engaged in that process seriously.
Yeah, just to one other point in terms of consultation. So we could go, obviously there's a number of layers of public consultation already occurring associated with this process, but just more generally to make you aware, if there were something emerging from the Monitoring Board review or from our trustee strategy review that requires constitutional change, we would have to go through another process of public consultation. And for example, the Monitoring Board is considering changes in its composition. When we wrote the original constitutional sections on the Monitoring Board part, we actually specifically designated organizations in it. We would probably have to amend the constitution to reflect the change in that. I don't anticipate it being controversial, but it was just an example that we'd have to go through another round of consultation, just like if we were going to do something on any of the specific areas of trustee oversight or due process, we may require to do more constitutional change in that. The Monitoring Board has a couple of suggestions where they actually have taken a position that would require constitutional change. So there would potentially be one more further round of public consultation. I assume it won't be contentious, having been through couple of phases of consultation, but it does exist from a purely legalistic standpoint.